Welcome to another episode of Hope After Child Loss. I'm your host, Greg Bufkin, and we are so glad that you joined us. Today, I'm going to be having a conversation with our guest, Jen Farlow, as she shares her story of her journey from two heartbreaking losses to experiencing God show up in the pain and the brokenness to a place of restoration and wholeness today. So, good morning, Jen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're so honored that you would choose to be a part of our podcast. So for those of us that are listening and some would like to know probably a little bit more about you. So could you just take a minute and tell us about you and your family?
Sure. So I am a single mom. I have one 8-year-old daughter, Alyssa. She's in third grade, and the two of us are like the Gilmore Girls. We are inseparable and just journey through life together. I am currently homeschooling her, and we live in Maryland during the school year. And this past summer, God gave us the summer home of our dreams in Prince Edward Island. And so that's where we are going to be spending our summers going forward, which is just a dream come true. And so we really do live a very beautiful and blessed life together.
Wow, that is so cool. Love the thought of spending summers in Prince Edward Island. What a great place.
Back it is magical.
Yeah, exactly. Our daughter used to love to watch the episodes of Anne of Green Gables.
Yep, I saw them when I was 5, and I knew I had to be there ever since.
Man, what a special blessing. Well, you know, Jen, you have a unique story because you were so young when your life was shattered by the trauma of not just one, but two losses, sort of back to back in a lot of respects. Your husband, Nathan, and before that, you guys actually lost a child to miscarriage. And I'd like for you to share a little bit about that. I want you to just take us back to wherever you would like to start and just talk a little bit about that and just help our listeners to frame that for our listeners so that they will know where this all started and where we and how that came to where we are today, to where you are today.
Sure. So I will start back at the very beginning. I grew up in Maryland. I was the oldest of 6 children and was raised in a strong Christian home. My parents really encouraged us from a young age to read the Bible for ourselves, to develop our own relationships with the Lord. They took us to church and taught us to pray. And I was just very steeped in this Christian environment from a young age. And I remember when I was about 13 is when 9/11 happened and the Twin Towers fell. And at the same time, these two snipers just started terrorizing my hometown. And so they would drive around and shoot random people like at the grocery store or the gas station. And my siblings and I weren't allowed to go outside. And I just remember it was such a terrifying time. And I was convinced the world was ending. And I couldn't fall asleep at night because I'd have these horrible nightmares. And my mom would come in my room and she would read Psalm 91 to me every night. And that just became a lifeline to me. And there were these verses about, you know, if you love the Lord and obey the Lord, then he's going to command his angels to protect you. And 10,000 will fall at your right hand, but it won't come near you. And I understand now that these were promises of eternal safety and security for the believer. But in my terror at 13, I took them very literally. And I said, okay, I know that I love God and obey God. Therefore, he's going to keep me safe because he said so. And so I didn't realize that I was thinking this until much later when it was really put to the test. But I got through that period, and fast forward a few years, I was 17 and Nathan Farlow walked in my front door on Valentine's Day of 2006. I was a senior in high school and he came to visit my youth group and I was instantly smitten. I was like, this is the greatest guy I've ever met. And we became best friends. And a few months later, we started dating and we were just soulmates from the very beginning. We knew right away that we were going to be married. And We just dated for 4 years, long distance all through college. And we were both very committed to purity until marriage. And so most of our dating relationship was just so many rules and restrictions and trying to pace things out and honor God and honor each other and just make it those 4 years till we could be married. And it was so challenging and such an uphill climb, but we kept saying to each other, you know, it's so worth it. The wait is so worth it because we're going to get to this point where we never have to say goodbye again. And we just know the Lord's going to honor our sacrifice and make it all worth it. And we got married June of 2010, and it was just this fairy tale wedding. And we really did live happily ever after. Like, it was such a beautiful, magical marriage. And it felt like every sacrifice we had made was so worth it. And the Lord was just rewarding us and giving us this beautiful relationship. I could not imagine it getting any better. And we moved to Houston, Texas. Nathan was an engineer with ExxonMobil. And so we lived there for our whole marriage and had this beautiful relationship, but circumstantially, we really struggled. There was a lot of difficulties that we faced in Texas. And Nathan had always wanted so badly to go to Harvard Business School. That was his dream. And so he worked for months on his applications and his tests and preparing for the interview. And he made it really far in the process. And we were just convinced, like, this is God's will. We're going to do this. And he's going to go to Harvard and get his dream. And at the last minute, the door closed. And we were not expecting that. And we were just like, God, we were so sure that you led us here. Why is this happening now? And around the same time, I unexpectedly lost my job. And we had just moved across town. We were far away from our church and our friends. And it kind of felt like a midlife crisis. Like, we were 25 and we just felt like the Lord had led us to all these doors and then shut them. And we were just trying to make sense of it all. And I remember Nathan took me out to dinner one night and he said, you know, I think that all these doors have been closed because it's time for us to start a family. And I was ecstatic because I wanted to, but I hadn't wanted to push it when it wasn't time. And so I got pregnant pretty much right away. And we were just over the moon. We're like, all this hardship was just pointing us to this direction. Like, we started a family and we were so excited. And I went to the doctor and she saw the heartbeat and she said, yeah, everything looks all good. Like, go tell your families. And so we flew to Maryland and made these big announcements to our families and they were all overjoyed. It was the first grandchild on each side. And we just got real busy planning and dreaming, and it never even entered my mind that I might not have a healthy pregnancy and baby. Like, we were just full speed ahead and so excited and confident and joyful. And I went to the doctor at 12 weeks and they were commenting, your stomach is so small. And, you know, maybe the baby isn't as big as we thought. And they were looking for the heartbeat. And I just remember my heartbeat filling the room. And that was the only thing we heard. And the midwives kind of looked at each other and they said, yeah, I think we need to do an ultrasound because we're not hearing anything. And I just got this dead weight in my stomach. Like, what do you mean you don't hear anything? So I was on the ultrasound table and I was just praying my heart out, God, please let there be some movement, something. And finally the midwife said, I'm so sorry, your baby died at least 4 weeks ago. Like, we don't even see a baby. And I was in complete shock. I thought I was going to be sick. Like, I just tried to get out to my car. I called Nathan in the parking lot. He said, wait right there, I'm coming. And he drove over, he climbed in my car and we just held each other and cried. And it was the lowest, the most hopeless I had ever felt. I felt like every dream I'd ever had just been shattered in that moment. And we had no idea what was going on. We didn't understand. We were so heartbroken. And it took another 4 weeks for me to miscarry. My body still thought I was pregnant and kept developing like I was pregnant. And at this point, I was praying so hard for a miracle because I'd heard of people who were told their babies were dead and then their babies were not. And I was like, Lord, I know you can resurrect this baby. And I just prayed so hard. And I did eventually miscarry at 16 weeks. I was able to deliver the baby at home. And the doctors had told me, you know, the baby passed so long ago, like, you're not going to see anything. But I actually got to see this tiny, perfect baby. Oh. Which was an absolute miracle. And we held the baby and prayed over it and buried it in our garden. And it was, we never knew if it was a boy or girl, but one scripture that I had really been clinging to was Romans 15:13, which says, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him." And we named the baby Hope, which means a confident expectation of good, because we just knew, we could just look at each other and know that God is still good. He has got us. He has good plans for us. And even if we never can have children, like, we have each other and we're going to be okay. And there's a lot of fear surrounding miscarriage, because you don't know if there's something wrong with you and maybe you'll never be able to have children. And God had answered my prayers and just sustained us and carried us. And just looking at Nathan, I knew he was the greatest gift I'd ever received. And if that was it, like, if this was our family, we would be fine. And the Lord had just been really good to us. And so,
Jen, let me ask you something. I think I'm not sure what your experience has been, but I know that my wife and I have lived through that as well. Do you think that there's some misperceptions that miscarriage is maybe, and I'll say this in quotes, that miscarriage is maybe a light grief, because you've never really met a lot of, most often people don't get to meet their child who lose the child through miscarriage. Mm. What would you say to that from your experience, your grief journey, and Nathan's through the loss of hope? And what would you say to a mom who's listening today, who's feeling this heavy burden of grief, having lost a child to miscarriage, but nobody else around her seems to really get it?
Yes. So I have read Jerry Sitzer's masterful book called A Grace Disguised, and it's about loss. And he went through absolutely horrific loss. If you're going to rate loss on a scale, he would top the list. But he has an entire chapter on how you cannot compare losses or rate losses. Up to that point, this was the most devastating heartbreak I'd ever experienced. And I think each person's worst pain is their own worst pain. And you just can't say, well, losing a baby to miscarriage is not the same as losing an actual child, because there's no comparison. Like, when you're in it, you're in it, and you're hurting. And yeah, that chapter really helped me. It's not looking at the losses saying which one is worse, because when you're in the season of grief and heartbreak, like, that's your reality. And I would just encourage moms who are feeling that. I've been there. I know the pain of that. And yeah. And for people who are out from the outside, just trying to understand, you can't understand until it's happened to you, but it is very a loss. True. It's the death of hopes and dreams and of a child. And that is something to be acknowledged and grieved and processed and worked through and healed from, just like you would with any loss or any death.
What was it like for Nathan?
So when Nathan got in my car, that was the first time I'd ever seen him really cry. Like, he was just heartbroken. And I think we both felt it very deeply. Like, this was our child, and this child had died. And it really, so it significantly impacted both of us. I think when you're so in love and you want a family and you create a child together, like, that's an expression of your love. And you just wonder, you know, who would this child have been? And especially having my own daughter now, it's like, I had another one and I want to know all about them. I want to know their personality and, I want to know what they look like. And I can't wait to get to heaven and meet that other child. And, you know, Alyssa's an only child here on earth, and that's really difficult for her, but knowing that she has a sibling in heaven is amazing, because whether that child lived for 8 weeks or 12 weeks or 80 years, like, they're fully human and they have a complete personality and identity. And I'm just so excited that we get to all spend eternity together.
Absolutely. And how thankful we are that we do have that certain hope of being reunited with our loved ones in heaven.
Yeah.
Well, Jen, let's pick back up on your story. So you guys experienced this devastating loss of miscarriage. Mm. So where does life go from there?
So about 2 months later, it was about Christmas time of 2013, I got pregnant with Alyssa. And it was pretty immediate after the miscarriage, which was just God's grace. And I did have some fear in that pregnancy of just hoping the same thing wasn't going to happen again. But I remember passing my due date, my original due date with the miscarriage was in April. And by that point, I was like 5 months pregnant with Alyssa. And I was really just like, wow, I would not be having this baby if I'd had that baby. And it just, I look at Alyssa and I'm like, she would not be here if it hadn't been for that loss. And so that doesn't make it go away. It doesn't make it all better, but I see God working in all of it. And Alyssa is such a gift to me now. I can't imagine not having her. Alyssa was born September 8th, 2014. And Nathan and I continued to just be in this season of really a lot of uncertainty about our future. We didn't know where we were supposed to live, what we were supposed to do. We were just desperately seeking God about a lot of things. And he actually decided to fast. He was doing an extended fast, and he would call me every day on his lunch break. And we would just spend that meal time praying and seeking the Lord and seeking his will for our lives. And I just remember Nathan saying, God, I thought I knew your will, and I don't. Like, you've just brought me to the end of myself. And so here I am, like, hands are open. I'm just fully surrendered to you. Your will be done. Do whatever you want in my life. Like, we are yours. And he just had this posture of complete surrender. And he was working a overnight turnaround shift at ExxonMobil. And so he would go to work all night, and he'd come home in the morning and sleep all day. And I remember telling a friend, I feel like a single mom because I'm doing this all by myself. Like, I have this 3-week-old baby and never see my husband. He's just working or sleeping all the time. And 2 days later, on October 5th, 2014, Nathan texts me early, early in the morning and said, hey, work was really slow. I'm going to be home early. He said, I love you. I'm praying for you. I can't wait to see you. And I fell asleep waiting for him. And I woke up hours later, and there was bright sunlight streaming in the window, and the bed next to me was empty. He wasn't there. And I fed Alyssa and was just waiting. And I thought, you know, maybe there's traffic and he's stuck in an accident or something, and never stopped to think, why would there be 5-hour traffic on a Sunday morning? And I started to get real worried and just said, tell myself, no, it's fine. Like, if there was an accident, somebody would come and tell you. And the moment I had that thought, there was a knock on the front door. And I think I just knew in that moment that my whole life had changed. Went to the door, saw a cop car outside in the street, and the sheriff was there. And he said, I'm so sorry. Your husband was hit head on by a drunk driver. He was killed instantly. And my condolences. And he was just about to leave. And my whole world fell apart. Like, I was in complete shock. I felt like I was far away watching this happen to somebody else. And I just panicked. Like, what do I do now? What am I supposed to do? I have a new baby. My family's all in Maryland. I don't know what to do. And so I called my next door neighbor. She came over and she stayed with me. And my mom got on the next plane. She was there by that afternoon. And packed me up. I was on a plane back to Maryland by the next morning. I knew I could not stay there one day without Nathan. He had been driving down Interstate 10 on his way home, and a drunk driver entered from the exit ramp and was driving the wrong way and just hit him head on. And both the drivers were killed instantly. And it just felt so incredibly final. Like, there's nothing anybody can do. Like, I just fell off a cliff, and I'm not going to hit bottom in this life. So I remember getting back to Maryland, and my parents had just sold my childhood home that I grew up in, and I met Nathan, and they're packing to move, like, all around me. And I'm just sitting in the bedroom holding my baby. Like, I've lost everything, like, everything that's possible to lose. And I just went through the motions for weeks and months of caring for Alyssa, keeping her alive. But I just prayed every day, God, please let me die while she's still a baby so that she doesn't know what's happened. And I wanted nothing more than to die and be with Nathan. I had no vision for life, for the future. I was a shell of a person just existing. I was completely dead inside. And I never felt rage toward this woman who had killed my husband. I could hardly even cry tears of grief. Like, I was just so numb. And the one overpowering emotion that I felt was just this blinding rage towards the Lord, because I was so convinced of his sovereignty. And all I could think was, there are a million and one ways that you could have stopped this, or this could have been different. And Nathan was fully surrendered to you, and he was praying for your will to be done. And if this is your will, I want no part of it. Like, I didn't know how to trust God ever for anything. He did not feel safe. He did not feel loving or good. And I just felt so cheated and betrayed. Like, we gave you everything. We spent our whole lives following you, honoring you, obeying you, and sacrificing and waiting. And this is what we get in return. And that's where that faulty theology from my childhood came into play, because I was just holding God at, we did A, B, and C, and you failed to keep up your end of the bargain and do X, Y, Z.
Right.
And it just felt so horrifically unfair. And like, how could this have happened to us? And how could we have just gone along so happily, and God knew all the time that this was coming, and we were just completely blindsided? Like, nothing in my entire life had ever prepared me for anything like this happening. And it was a very long time of just complete devastation and anger and hopelessness. And I felt like I was going to lose my mind. Like, there was nobody to talk to. I couldn't pray. There was just nowhere to go with the pain and the loneliness. And in desperation, I started reaching out to pastors at my church and just hoping that somebody would give me something to help me get through. And I would sit with these guys, and they would just give me these scriptures that I had known my entire life. And they would give me like theological doctrines and feel like they had helped solve the problem. And I just came away like, I know all these verses. I know everything you just said to me. I believe it in my head, but I have no idea how to connect it with everything that I've just experienced. And I really felt like I was going to go insane. Like, reality had just been upended. And eventually my senior pastor reached out to me and said, do you want to talk? And I didn't think it would do any good at this point, but I said, why not? So I went to his office and I sat down across from his desk, and I just remember his eyes were just so full of love and compassion for me that I just broke, and I just sobbed for a good 15 minutes. And then I just poured everything out for like the next 2 hours, just all my questions, my anger, my doubts, my blasphemy. And what I'll always remember is that he never tried to give me a single answer or defend God to me or convince me not to walk away from my faith. Like, he just sat in the ashes with me, and he loved me, and he hurt with me. And I left his office with a different view of the Lord. And I didn't see God as some grim deity in the sky who was frustrated with my doubt and just waiting for me to get my act together and start trusting him again. And I instead saw him as like this father who is holding a raging child in his arms, and the child is pounding his chest and screaming, and the father, nothing the child can do will make the father distance himself and pull away. And the father is holding him, and he's like, when you've cried all your tears, when you're done, when you've gotten it all out, I'm still going to be here holding you, and nothing you say or do can faze me or change my love for you. And so I just started to experience the Lord as this father in a way that I never had. And he was so patient with the years that it took me to dismantle everything about my worldview and my faith and just start to rebuild it on this foundation that allows for the worst pain and suffering. And the Lord was so faithful through that process. And I can look at myself today and look at who I was then and just know that I take zero credit for any faith that I have. Like, that is all the Lord, because I gave up on him and he never gave up on me and he never let me go. And he has really just put my heart back together again in every way.
Jen, that is so good. I think sometimes it is people don't understand, and they do. I'm so glad that you shared what you did about the two different types of people that you encountered. The ones who tried to give you answers, the ones who shared platitudes, and these are people that I think are well-meaning because they want to help, but they don't really understand. But an amazing story of how your pastor helped you. You came in with one perspective and left with quite another. And yet he didn't try to change your mind about anything. He didn't throw scripture at you. And he didn't tell you that you were wrong for raging or feeling, even expressing what you said was blasphemous thoughts or words. He just simply allowed you to share what you were experiencing. Mm. How like God that is.
Yeah.
That, as you said, we have a Father who knows us and who adores us. He grieves with us when we grieve.
Yeah.
He knows how broken our hearts are. Mm. And he's so incredibly patient with us and so good at just loving on us when we're in such a difficult place.
Yes. And he doesn't hurry us through the process. Like, the story of Job has come to mean so much to me because Job literally questions God for 40 chapters in the Bible. And God gives him that space. He lets him have it all out. And at the end, he doesn't give Job a single answer. Like, none of Job's questions ever get answered. But what he experiences is the Lord himself and the Lord's presence. And he says at the end of the book, my ear had heard of you, and now my eye has seen you. And that's exactly what I experienced through this incredibly long and painful process, was just a fresh understanding of what it means for Jesus to be Emmanuel, God with us. Like, he is a man of sorrows. He's acquainted with grief, and he sits with us in our suffering, and he's not trying to rush us through it. It makes me think of a surgery. Like, when you've got a mortal wound, you can't just put a Band-Aid on it and pretend everything's fine. Like, you've got to get in there. You've got to do the hard work, and there's blood and there's mess and there's pain, but in the end you heal from the inside out. And that's really what grief is. It's just permission to sit in that mess and sit in that brokenness for as long as it takes, and let the Lord, the great physician, just minister to each one of those places. Cause that's the only way you're going to make it out, is if you heal from the inside out.
Absolutely. And that healing process is different for everybody.
Yeah, it is.
And going back to the book of Job, you know, community is so important when we walk through something this painful and so horrendous. And it was interesting how Job's friends showed up, and for a while, I think it was for 7 days, if I'm not mistaken, they just simply sat there with him. They gave him the gift of their presence. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until they opened their mouths that they screwed things up, right?
Exactly.
And they started trying to give advice, and they judged him. So from your experience, would you describe a little bit about the community that you had in your life, both when you guys lost Hope and when you lost Nathan and Alyssa's only 3 weeks old at the time? Mm. So what kind of support did you get? What did that look like?
I had incredible community. Walking through the miscarriage, I was in Texas. None of my family was there, but I just constantly had people praying for me, sending me little gifts, and just being showing up in every way that they could. And it felt so validating of my pain. Like, you asked earlier why some people just don't understand or validate a miscarriage as a real loss. But I felt so validated in that grief process, and just surrounded by people who got it. Either they had miscarried themselves, or they knew just how much we were suffering. And so we were really, really loved on by our community in the miscarriage. And I cannot even begin to describe the community that has surrounded us every day since Nathan's passing. Nathan was the most incredible man I've ever known. And he was so loved, and he had such a wide circle of friends. And those friends have just been Alyssa's surrogate uncles and like second fathers. And they've just come around us in every way and just included us in their lives. And it can be awkward to pull a single woman and a child into your intact family unit. But there's just people who will not give up. Like, they are relentless in making us feel normal and like one of the group. And I just cannot say enough about how they've reached out to us. And, you know, the Bible is full of admonitions to take care of the widow and the orphan, but these friends don't make us feel like an outreach project or like they're just fulfilling their Christian duty. Like, they really value us and want us in their lives. And even just looking at my family, I mean, these same five siblings that I helped raise from babies, like, I had no idea how much I would need them one day. And they have just been unbelievably supportive. And I tell Alyssa, you are drowning in love. Like, you have no idea how blessed you are to just be so loved and affirmed and supported. And she's got lots of aunts and uncles. She's got wonderful grandparents. She's got this huge church community. And even, you know, kind of temporarily moving home this summer, we were able to build this new community in Canada. And it's like everywhere we go, we've just been loved on and supported. And God's just connected us with people who get it. And yeah, it's, I cannot say enough of how important it is to have community and to have people who just treat you normally. They're not tiptoeing around or handling you with kid gloves. Like, I'd rather people say something offensive than not say anything because they're trying so hard to not cross any lines. Like, just having people be authentic and do real life with you is so, so needed and so necessary and refreshing.
That is so good. And it is so accurate. I think that, I know when Kathy and I lost our son, Ryan, we were blessed as well to have such a strong community of people around us who loved us and who knew and loved Ryan and were there for our daughter as well at some level. I think that sometimes people, as you, I think, were just referring to, some people are reticent to say anything because I think they're afraid that if they do bring it up, that it's going to hurt worse.
Yes.
Or if they bring it up, then somehow they're going to have to deal with it and they don't know how to.
Yes.
What would you say to that person?
Well, yes, I had a counselor that I talked to every week for 4 years, and she was an absolute lifeline for me. I don't think I would be sane without her. And I remember telling her one time, I don't think you said a single thing to me this whole time that greatly changed my perspective or like was a lifeline to get me through. It was literally just you listening to me every day for 4 years. Like, that was assurance that I was not going crazy, that I was on a journey and that I was going to be okay. And, you know, she's a licensed grief counselor. She has a lot of wisdom. She has a lot of perspective, but she didn't try to impose any of that on me. Like, she just sat with me and listened to me. And she gave me the space. You know, sometimes I didn't want to talk about it or think about it, and I needed to talk about something totally different, but I knew that she was an open door. And anytime I needed to share something, I could. And that was just huge having her to walk with. And I think that I've suffered significantly in my life, and I still feel unequipped to care for other people when they're suffering. It's one of the most awkward situations to walk into of, you know, somebody's life has just been ruined and here you are showing up. Like, what are you possibly going to do or say that's going to change anything? Well, nothing. Like, nothing is going to change it, but you can help them feel a little less alone in it.
Absolutely.
And I think that is that is all that people need, is they need someone to sit with them, to kind of follow their lead. Like, do you want to talk about it, or do you need to talk about something totally different? Do you need to cry? Do you need to laugh? And I think we can take on the burden of, we've got to make this better. Like, we've got to show up and do something for this person. But I think if we're allowing ourselves to sit in that space of awkwardness, like, there are no answers, there is nothing that's going to change this, but we're just going to sit here with you, and we're going to be led by the Holy Spirit and by what you need right now, so that people feel supported and they know they're not alone and they're not shut out of real life. Like, they're still involved in a community, and they're still loved, and they're still wanted, and they're not isolated on this island of grief now. I think people need others moving towards them more than ever.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that, having been there. I think people don't realize how significant and how important the gift of presence is when something like this happens.
Yes.
It's not about the words, because sometimes you're in such a state of shock when, especially in those early days, hours, and even weeks, that often you won't even be able to remember what they said. And for us, what we won't ever forget is simply the ones who showed up and just offered their presence with us, and who listened to us over and over and over.
Yes, go ahead.
No, that's okay.
Well, there's the people who are in it for the long haul, because there's always this crush of people, you know, in between the tragedy and the funeral, and all these events are kind of happening all at once. And people make meal trains, and they make fundraisers, and they send flowers, and they come to the service. And I felt that very tangible drop off after the services were over and after everybody had kind of gone back home. And then I was just beginning to wake up to the fact that this is my reality now. And everyone else had kind of gone back to their normal. And that was incredibly lonely and isolating. But I will never forget the people who have just walked with me. They've pressed in. They've been intentional to be there every step of the way. Because really, the loss is just beginning. You're in shock when all those events and things are happening. And it means a lot when people say something or do something, but then it's so easy for them to go back to their normal life, and the shock is just beginning to wear off for you. And it's just such a long road. So the people who really stick it out for the long haul make a huge, huge difference.
Oh, that is so true. Because I think what people don't, on the outside who are looking in, don't realize is that once the funeral is over, that's when the grieving really begins for those of us who have lost someone.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult to try to wrap your head around. As you said, they go back to their normal everyday life, and your life has been shattered and turned upside down, and the word normal does not even apply any longer. And you're just trying to figure out how to navigate all of this.
Right.
So, Jim, I want to talk a little bit about what God has done to, and taking you from those early days when, as you said, you didn't even care whether you lived or not, and you really did want to die and go and be with Nathan and be with Hope. A lot of people don't understand that. But, you know, it's so cool how God works in the lives of his people. You know, there's scripture in Romans that talks about how God works all things together for good for those who love him. When something like this happens, it's almost impossible to comprehend that that could be true. So you have already shared with us some of the things that God has done through this process, the good things that he's done in preparing you and helping you walk through this. Tell us a little bit about a ministry that you have started or a blog that you've started. I think it is a ministry, and it's called I Choose Hope. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So, yeah, there were a few key moments that the Lord really used to propel me from that place of the best of my life is over, and I'm just kind of waiting to be done. He took me from that place to really having vision and confidence for my future. And one of those moments was shortly after Nathan passed, I was unpacking some of his stuff and I found an old Bible of his, and there was a sticky note in, I believe it's 2 Timothy. I can't remember the exact reference, but it was Paul's letter to Timothy. And Nathan had highlighted these verses several times in different colors. Like, these really meant something to him. And the verses said, "I'm already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith." And Nathan had put a sticky note in his Bible next to these words. And he said, "We have a race to run. Jesus has conquered death. God will be with you." And it was like a word from heaven straight to me from Nathan saying, "I ran my race. I finished my fight. Here's the baton. You take it and run your race." And it was this charge that I could not just exist and wait to die. Like, I had work to do and my race was not done yet. And I just started asking God, what am I supposed to do with this? Because not everyone has this story. And I don't think it's just for me. Like, I think that there's a place for this in the world. And I think that people need to hear my journey and how you've healed me. And even people who have given up on God because of their sufferings, I feel like he's met me so powerfully through my sufferings and because of my sufferings that I just want that to be a testimony to other people. And it was a very, very long process. I remember on the three-year anniversary of losing Nathan, realizing, wow, I'm actually looking to the future more than I'm living in the past. But it took me 3 years to get to that point of feeling anticipation for the future again. And again, that's just assurance to me that God does not have a time, or God's timeline is not ours. And we can feel this pressure of, oh, I have to do something now with this because I can't waste time. I can't let this go to waste. But God kind of gave me permission, like, you take as long as you need to heal and to get what I'm putting into you so that that can then minister to other people. So I did, I started a blog called I Choose Hope, and I tried to be as authentic as possible with my grief journey and all the emotions and doubts and questions, because I just knew that I wasn't the only person who felt this way. And I think a lot of times we can be afraid to voice these things because it sounds blasphemous. It sounds like we're going to get in trouble with God. But I'm just reminded of the Psalms where David poured out in joy and in sadness and in grief and pain and questions. And the important thing about David's process was that he vocalized all of it to the Lord. Like, he didn't let it sit in there and simmer. He vocalized it and he shared it with the Lord and he processed with the Lord. And so this blog that I started was kind of my own journey of processing, knowing that I was on a journey and the Lord was going to take me to a place of healing, but I wanted to be as authentic as possible in the suffering and in the pain so that when somebody else is walking through that, they don't think I'm going crazy. They're like, no, there's somebody else who's been there and look where God has brought them. So I really was just trying to document this process. And I've been working on a book for the past 8 years, which I really hope to publish one day. That just kind of further tells my story of how the Lord has met me and healed me.
Yeah. I think it's so important that we share our stories, because it helps in our healing, but it also, it's a way of providing hope through a connection with somebody who's been through it with others who are listening. And sometimes what all that they long for is to know that someone who's been where they are is where you are now, And on the other, not on the other side of it, but in that process, somewhere down the road, there is hope. And God is so good at restoring what's been lost. He's so good at bringing hope back into our lives, and what seems almost impossible, to bring joy back into our lives again. Yes. And the early, I think, you know, early on, it sometimes you even feel guilty if you experience joy or if you mm-hmm. laugh. But, you yeah. know, that's, I think that's what God wants us to live our lives with, these scars.
Yes.
And those scars are reminders, you know, but even carrying the scars, we can experience joy and hope and wholeness again.
Yes, that is so well put. And you know, that I think is one of the most personally profound parts of my story to me, is just that in the beginning, people would come to me and they're well-meaning, they're trying to make me feel better, but they would say, "You're so young, you're only 26, like you're going to find somebody else." And that never comforted me, because I knew that Nathan was my person and I never had the desire to recreate that. And I think that helps me again to see just the totality of the healing work that God has done in my life, because he did not send a chapter two or a happily ever after. And I will not have Nathan back until I get to heaven. And so I'm existing with this brokenness, and yet there is so much joy and there is so much beauty and so much fullness of life when you're walking with the Lord. And nobody from the outside can look at that and say, "Well, of course, like God fixed your circumstances." He didn't. I'm still a single mom and I'm still a widow. And yet I have joy that cannot be taken away from me, because it's not based on my circumstances. It's based on the knowledge of who God is.
Absolutely. It exists apart from circumstances. And that's the part that sometimes people don't understand, who don't have a relationship with him. But mm-hmm. God defies logic. I love how he does that over and over and over. And I love that scripture, Ephesians 3:20, that says God's able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine. And yes. you've seen him do that on this, what now, 8-year journey that you've yes. been on.
100%. And I'm so often encouraged by the scripture that says these light and momentary afflictions are preparing for us a weight of glory beyond all comparison. And if you think about the timeline of eternity, like when we get to heaven and when we see Jesus and when we are reunited with our loved ones, everything that we suffered on earth, no matter how horrific, is going to feel like a blip on the timeline. Because once you get to heaven, the timeline never stops. It just goes on and on forever. And it's like the deeper our capacity for pain, the deeper our capacity for glory and joy and wholeness. And so whatever we suffer on this side of eternity has eternal purpose, and it's preparing us just for overwhelming glory and wholeness. And so there's perspective in everything we go through. It's not for nothing. It's preparing us. It's making us more like Jesus, and it's preparing us for eternity.
Absolutely. That is so well said from somebody who is living it. And, you know, I want to encourage you who are listening today, check out Jen's blog. Again, it's called I Choose Hope. I have read several excerpts from it. And Jen has an incredible gift of writing. And as she said, she did try to make this as authentic and as, and I think it's authentic and raw, but it's such a sweet testimony about what God's done in her life. And it's so encouraging that we're able to share from our hearts, like Jen has shared from her heart in her blog writings, that we can just be authentic with God. And he gets it. He understands. He's the one who gave us emotions. He's the one who wired us like we are. So please check out her blog, and hopefully at some point in the future, we'll be hearing about this book that she's been working on.
Just putting it out there so you can keep me accountable. Now I have to write it because I've said it.
Exactly. You've got all these listeners now who are expectantly awaiting the release of that book. So you got to keep us updated, right?
I will. And it has been such a pleasure to chat with you today. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it is our honor to have you, Jen. We are so thankful that you would come on and share your story on one of our episodes. And we look forward to seeing what God's going to be doing in your life and in Alyssa's life in the future.
Thank you. God bless you. Grateful for your friendship.
God bless you. And we are so thankful for your friendship as well, Jen.